Welcome everybody to All About Symbian. This is Insight Podcast number 179, recording this on Friday the 12th of August 2011. I'm Steve Litchfield for All About Symbian. With me I have the head honcho himself in Sussex.
Hello everybody, it's Rafe Blanford here.
And I have the other honcho, the Scottish one, up in Edinburgh.
Hello, I'm Stephen Berkoff. That's a fringe joke, everybody. Look it up.
So Ewan Spence. Also up in, we have the Hull guru himself, Mr. David Gilson.
Yes, I'm here, and I will try not get angry about the week's current events.
Yeah, before we say anything else, I'd just like to point out for anyone listening, we're all safe from the London riots, and none of us were involved because we're all good, upstanding citizens.
Indeed, indeed.
Most of the time.
Am I?
Apart from you.
Well, you're not.
I'm moving on with some news, analysis and odds and ends. Now, Gartner has released a summary of its worldwide analysis for the mobile industry for this last quarter, just gone quarter to 2011. Yeah, as expected, Symbian has now been leapfrogged by Android. 43.4% market share for Android, although the anecdotal evidence does suggest that quite a few Android phones are getting bought and then returned again, but that's perhaps one for hearsay. Still waiting for results and facts on that. Symbian market share now, smartphone market share worldwide, 22.1% across the world. That's still 23.8 million smartphones sold, though. I mean, a lot of those are fairly low cost and obviously a lot less profit per unit than, for example, Apple are making. They seem to be walking off with the lion's share of the profits in the mobile world. Rafe, what are your take on these particular quarter two results, and are they going to get any worse in quarter three?
Well, I think we'll focus on quarter two initially. The interesting thing is these are results from Gartner, and obviously very different to what Nokia itself reported for Q2, which was around 16 point something million phones, whereas Gartner is saying Nokia sold about 22.4 million-ish. There are some extra Symbian ones from the FOMA handsets in Japan, but roughly, say, 22.5 million. Obviously, a discrepancy there of getting on for 7 or 8 million phones. And the obvious question is, why is that? Well, that's because Gartner reports what's called sell-through, so that's sales to actual consumers, as opposed to what Nokia is concerned about, which is sales to operators and retail channels. So there's a distinct difference there. So why might that be happening? Well, the fairly obvious answer to that is the channels are destocking Nokia products, and that's because there's a transition to Windows Phone coming up, but also partly because in Q1 there was sort of overstocking in the channel. Stephen Edop did make reference to this, and that there was channel stuffing. So actually, the interesting thing about this, it shows that the Symbian smartphone sales haven't fallen as much as everyone expected. And if you look ahead to Q3, the fact that all the destocking has taken place in Q2 probably means we'll see Nokia report higher sales themselves than they did in Q2. So I think they did 16.9 million, something like that. They may well go back up towards 20 million themselves. I mean, Gartner will probably report similar numbers or slightly below. So that does actually put a slight change on which is the number one smartphone manufacturer. And actually, by Gartner's numbers, Nokia is just the number one smartphone manufacturer, followed by Apple and Samsung, which is obviously in contrast to the reported numbers from those companies where it's one iPhone, two Samsung, three Nokia. So it just shows, I think, quite clearly we have to be careful when looking at these numbers, because there are distinctions between how you define sales. And I think actually Gartner's quite right in one sense to do the sell-through, because that's actual sales of real handsets to consumers, which is in one sense what really counts. So these numbers actually show that the Q2 for Nokia wasn't as bad as some people have supposed. And, you know, you ask, what does that mean going on? Well, given that the sort of stocks will now be pretty thin on Nokia Symbian devices, I'd imagine we'll see a reasonably healthy Q3 in terms of numbers reported by Nokia. I would still expect there to be an overall slight downward trend. So, I mean, just pulling a number out of the air, I would estimate around the 19, 20 million mark, according to the Gartner reporting. Now, how Nokia reports that may come slightly different, but I wouldn't expect, as some have said, there to be a further fall off from, say, 16 million. So these numbers are actually really quite interesting, and it's unusual to see this much of a difference between the kind of the sales, yeah, and the sell-through. And as I say, it's about destocking. Of course, with the Windows Phone devices coming along, a lot of retailers and operators are saying, well, we want to make sure we manage our Nokia inventory correctly. And because they are selling an awful lot of them, you know, you see this kind of disparity. And it tends to happen when you've got items that you sell a lot of, simply because you have to have more stock. And indeed, the same thing actually happens when Apple are expected to produce a new iPhone, for example. You know, retailers, operators will start getting rid of old stock, and it's, you know, part and parcel of doing business. But I think, you know, well worth paying attention to, because it tells a story that I think quite a lot of people have missed.
I'd also like to add in one little wrinkle here as well. I remember last year on the comments that we had on many articles and podcasts, the number of Android people going, oh yeah, your Nokia numbers don't count because people are just buying them in $100 smartphones and not using them as smartphones. They're just using them to make calls. And strangely enough, I don't hear them making this argument when they start lumping in all the numbers of the £50 ZTE handsets, things like the Orange San Franciscos. There's some lovely cheap Samsung ones, things like the HTC Wildfires, very small phones. They're being used as phones, and, you know, anecdotal evidence as such. But there's a whole bundle of stuff kicking around in terms of in-flight Wi-Fi numbers from American Airlines and GoGo, use of the Facebook mobile app. Application. And so, you know, numbers are numbers. We can find what we want to find in them. Yes, Android is selling a lot of them. But again, you know, the question that was asked of us, we will ask of everybody else. How many of those are really being used as smartphones? And you know what? I suspect that they're going to be about the same. I think that the sort of users of Android, of iOS, and of Symbian are going to be much of a muchness. I think that the fluctuations that we're getting are actually in the shovelware of the phone markets, the sort of bloatware of just throwing everything out in that £150 to £50 market. Discuss.
Yeah, no, it's an interesting point. I would still feel that iOS and Android probably have a higher percentage of kind of aware users, if you like. Android is, I think, dropping off quite rightly, as you say, as it goes into the mid-tier market. You know, people buying the £150, $150 Android phones, I think, are probably going to be less aware of what they can do with it. Against a rising tide of everyone being aware of app stores and services on their phone. But then you can look at some of the feature phones, you know, Nokia Series 40 devices, their touch and type ones, which have Ovi Store, Ovi Maps, and, you know, they're being used in much the same way. So that, you know, distinction, that definition does start to vary a lot. And so we have to be careful. Just one other thing I think that's worth pointing out, in terms of the top vendors, you've got Nokia, Samsung, LG, Apple, ZTE, Research in Motion, HTC, Motorola, Huawei, and Sony Ericsson. That's for mobile phones generally. And actually, Nokia had the same thing in feature phones, that they had sort of overstocking. And so they actually sold more units than there might be expected, 97 million versus 69 million for Samsung, giving them a very healthy lead, which perhaps means Nokia will stay number one for longer than people expected. Because some people were talking about Samsung taking over Nokia's number one overall position. But looking at smartphones, it's interesting to see ZTE coming up, also Huawei, you know, those two Chinese based manufacturers, and Research in Motion, you know, the BlackBerry device is starting to fall off a little bit. It's now on 12.6 million devices, and HTC there on 11 million, so about to get taken over. So, you know, we've concentrated on Nokia, but there's also a lot of activity going on in the rest of the smartphone market that, you know, worth paying attention to. And, you know, people have called RIM the new Nokia, which is perhaps a little unfair, but there's plenty of dynamism still left in this market. And, you know, even something like Samsung's Bada, you know, that's at 2 million units for the last quarter. And I think the other numbers that people have been picking out is Windows Phone 7, Microsoft, you know, at about 1.7 million. I think we have to be careful there. There's obviously a lot of people who are, I think, pro Symbian and Migo in terms of what Nokia did, said Microsoft isn't selling anything. Well, I think all bets are off until Nokia gets into that market. When you've got a manufacturer concentrating solely on it, it could be a very different story, and obviously Manco coming along too. But, you know, there's almost an infinite number of stories you can tell from this set of numbers, depending on what particular point you want to put across.
And I do have to say that it was quite an innovative viral marketing strategy that Research in Motion implemented in London last week. I think everybody now is completely aware of the capability of the BlackBerry messaging software.
That's probably a fair point.
You made one of the points I was going to make earlier about the lies, damn lies and statistics, the number of niche surveys which measure how much particular handsets access a particular page and then deriving a news story from that, which then get picked up and redistributed all over the world, saying how one platform, one manufacturer is doing so well. It's all numbers. The only ones we really trust are the ones from Nokia and the other manufacturers, from IDC, from Gartner, and from Canalys, and all the others are just smoke and mirrors, in my opinion. And just to comment on the Android phones getting lower down the price tier. I mean, Rafe, you may not have been spotting some of the figures, but you can now get Android phones with capacitive screens for as little as £40 or £50 on Pay As You Go. And we're very much looking at a whole continuum, really. I renamed my smartphone show, people may remember, 2 years ago to just the phone show, because I could foresee this happening. There was just the smartphones and feature phones were just getting ever closer together. And you can now go from £0 to £600. And the border between a phone and a smartphone is getting ever more blurred. And in terms of pricing, there's a massive overlap now. So I think that I noticed that Gartner did distribute two tables, one of just overall mobile phone sales, mobile handsets, and one of smartphones. But the two are very much linked, and there will come a time, I suggest, in about a year or so's time, where they'll just do one table for mobile handsets across the world.
Yeah, I agree, Steve. It may be a little longer than a year. And there is a suggestion that feature phones might come back. I've talked about how Series 40 might take some of the bottom end of Symbian. But yes, you're right in the sense the distinction between the two becomes increasingly vague. But yes, you're right about those cheap Android handsets. We've got, I think it's the ZTE Blade 2 coming out soon. Orange have just released their latest City-branded Android phone, which I think
is it the coming... Android hole? Is it the orange hole? Yeah,
I think they're looking for something a little more cosmopolitan than hole, perhaps. But that's, you know, again, I think that's about the £80 price range. It has a 4-inch screen, and you know, yes, it's still underpowered in processor and some other departments and memory in particular. But you're right, Steve. You know, those are coming in, but that's as Ewan suggested earlier, perhaps people being less aware of buying an Android handset. It's very difficult to talk about that sort of thing because we haven't got any hard numbers. But I know I see plenty of people with smartphones who haven't bought it because it's a smartphone. They bought it because it's, you know, what they want or what they've been offered.
Yeah. Let's move on. A few other items of news and kind of rumour and speculation, but not in the nasty device leak sense. This is actually something that one of Nokia's employees said. The president of Nokia's US operation, Chris Weber, who was talking to All Things Digital, and talking about how the company was heavily focusing on the US market, Weber said that Nokia Inc. will be dropping everything else apart from Microsoft Windows Phone. And people have widely interpreted this as basically Nokia said, that's it with Symbian, or certainly Symbian in America. We're just going one platform for now. Rafe, is that an accurate picture?
I think it's a slightly exaggerated way of putting it. I mean, the quote that this comes from is an interview by All Things D, which is well worth a read. And the quote from Nokia is actually, when we launch Windows Phone, we will essentially be out of the Symbian business, the S40 business. It will be Windows Phone and accessories around that. The reality is we are not successful with Windows Phones. It doesn't matter what we do elsewhere. Well, yes, that's quite true for the American market. And when they're talking about out of the Symbian business, this is really a reference to the operator market rather than third-party sales or SIM-free sales, which, as we know, in the States are pretty small anyway. So it's not that, you know, you won't be able to get them at all. They'll still be available through third-party retailers. And I think Series 40 devices will still be there or possibly come back in the future. But without the headline smartphones, it would be difficult to do so, as indeed Nokia found so far with their Series 40 devices in America under kind of the Symbian standing things. So I think a lot of the way this has been picked up has kind of been overemphasized in the reporting. I mean, I hesitate to be critical because in one sense the broad picture is true, but I think it gives a slight misinformation here in that it's not that they're pulling out altogether. It's that, yes, the concentration for the US market has to be on Windows Phone, and well, that's common sense. I mean, we don't really need an interview from the president of Nokia US to tell us that. Nonetheless, you know, I think it's absolutely right that Nokia in America is going to have to concentrate on Windows Phone. It does have kind of a unique opportunity here to kind of get back into the US market. I mean, in terms of smartphones, they're on just a couple of percent with the Symbian devices, and they've had some success with operators in terms of things like the C7 Astound or the Nokia Neuron on T-Mobile. But relatively speaking, they haven't been present in terms of smartphones in any meaningful way compared to, you know, the Android or the iPhone devices in the US market, and that's been reflected in the sales. So to say that they're pulling out in terms of Symbian and low-end phone business. Symbian, yes, there won't be another Symbian device arranged by an operator in the US. It doesn't make sense when there's Windows phone devices which are more attractive to that market. Series 40, I would fully expect there, you know, if Windows phone is successful, there to be Series 40 devices arranged by operators as well. It's, you know, only makes sense. So yes, the story's you know, quite right in one sense, and I think it's an interesting interview with Chris Webber, and we'll put a link in the show notes to go and read it. But some of the way this has been reported is kind of another Nokia step back. Is I think it's reading too much into this particular interview. And the quote itself doesn't actually use the words pull out. It's just pointing out that Windows Phone is the critical thing in the US. And, well, yes, of course it is.
Yeah. David, you had a comment here.
Yes. America has been such a conundrum for Nokia. Because on one hand, they've had such a hard time doing their business there. But they do have to really focus and push and put everything they've got behind Windows Phone for better or worse. I mean, but to quote a phrase, you've made your bed, you have to lie in it. But I can see the frustration of Nokia fans. It's almost as if they're cannibalizing their own market. I mean, there will be some people in America who still want to buy Symbian devices. And also, a lot of people are very frustrated about not being able to buy the N9 over there. But for whatever reason, the American networks and tech press have not been receptive to Symbian, so Nokia just haven't been able to make any headway there. So they've made the decision to go Windows Phone, and they really do have to, they have to make that work now, which is a shame, because you would think that they probably could manage to sell at least some S40 handsets, and the N9 would do very well there as well, but they're not going to do that either.
I think that's right, David. I mean, in one sense, the US is an extreme version of Nokia's market problem. You get, on the one hand, where a market will take everything and loves Nokia, yet the other end, where Nokia is less well-liked. I will point out, as I said, I think the Series 40 devices are still going to be sold, but they're right to say if Windows Phone doesn't work there, it will be very hard to sell Series 40 devices. And here we are just talking about operators. It will still be possible to buy Symbian devices. It will be possible to buy the N9, but they're not going to be ranged and available through an operator. So that means you'll have to buy them SIM-free. Now, whether Nokia will actually put some stock into that market, I don't know, perhaps not, but as always, there will be stuff available through the sort of grey market, through third-party retailers. So it's not that these devices aren't going to be available, and these days, you know, Nokia's warranties and things like that are international, so that's less of an issue for people who are buying, you know, through third-party retailers. So again, that's why I said it's a bit misleading. It's not that they're not going to be available at all. It's not available through operators, and as I sort of suggested, they haven't really been available through operators in significant numbers. We've had the C7 down, the Nokia Neuron, which is two out of a lot of Symbian phones in the portfolio have been available in the sense of available through operators.
And Nokia in America as a conundrum. Anybody? Anemic air icon.
Thank you. Thank you, Ewan.
By conundrum, I take it you mean anagram, but I think people...
Da-da-da-da-da-da.
Boom. Countdown Channel 4.
Now we know how Ewan spends his afternoons.
Too much time on his hands. Not. At some point in the next 5 minutes, I'm going to be whisked away through a wormhole, so I want to get this news item in quick, and then Rafe can take over. Mac owners like myself, who have enjoyed basically bulletproof syncing from the likes of iCal Address Book to all the Nokia and Symbian smartphones, it just works wonderfully. I'm rather disappointed to learn that the latest version of the macOS X Lion doesn't actually have iSync, and they've actually removed it. But not to worry, I've had several people emailing copies of the software. Not only can you just grab iSync from your old Snow Leopard backups if you have one, you can, if you get really stuck, you can't find iSync on the internet because it's not officially available, drop me a line and I can just put it on a Dropbox somewhere. The Snow Leopard version of iSync, and you install that straight on Mac OS X Lion, and you are there, basically there with the full iSync again under Lion. So, a bit of a shame that Apple have called time on that particular utility, but hopefully you'll be back up and running and syncing in no time for the next 2 or 3 years. Rafe, can you take over with this Ovi calendar? And that's now closing on the web, and I shall bid the podcast listeners goodbye, and I'll catch you next week.
Yes, thank you, Steve. I'll take over here. And I wanted to mention Ovi Calendar here. We did briefly touch on this in last week's podcast, but we'll go into a bit more detail here. And what's happening is the web version of Ovi Calendar is to close at the end of August. Now, the way this worked is you used to back up data from your phone, from your calendar, via SyncML onto the Ovi.com website, and it was then available to view in a calendar format, much like Google Calendar, Yahoo Calendar, or any other online calendar. You had week view, month view, you could see appointments, you could edit appointments. Now, if you like, the web app version of this, the actual visual bit of it, is closing. However, the data part of it, the backup service, if you will, which also includes contacts, is still going to be available, and Nokia haven't given any end date on that. Indeed, I think it's going to continue indefinitely because it's used by Series 40 devices as well as the Symbian devices, and obviously having a backup of people's data is a pretty good thing to have given how easily mobile phones can go missing. But yes, it does mean a sad end to the kind of the web version of Ovi Calendar, and sad to see this go. It joins the other Ovi services that haven't quite made it, things like Ovi Files or Engage, and indeed Share on Ovi, which is still available but has really ceased development. That leaves kind of the core services available. That's Ovi Maps, Ovi Store, and Ovi Music. And in one sense, they're the main services, and those are the ones that have survived out of the quite literally millions of pounds of spending that Nokia put into Ovi. And of course, we'll be saying goodbye to the Ovi brand name. I mean, that's already started happening in some cases. Ovi Store is coming up shortly. I imagine they've just switched over the back end from Ovi Publish to Nokia Publish, and Nokia Maps, as we know, in Beta Labs is now Nokia Maps, not Ovi Labs. Ovi Maps. But I was rather sad to see Calendar go because it was a useful service. I did use it occasionally, mainly because I was successfully backing up my calendar data to it, and you know, would occasionally go and look at it when I needed to see appointments. But I will admit I use it very infrequently. I suspect this is the problem here, that there wasn't much in the way of usage demand. And Nokia said, you know, usual kind of corporate speak, said that they were shutting it down so they could concentrate on other priorities and on their disruptive technologies to come, which I think is code word for there weren't enough users for us to justify continuing this service. If you're looking for an alternative, you can link with Google Maps or Google Calendar and Hotmail Calendar or Windows Live Calendar, I think is the correct brand name for it now, as well as various other online calendars using SyncML or Mail for Exchange. Ewan, did you have any particular view on this? Do you think it's the right thing to do to shut down a service if it's not being used when there's alternatives available, given what's happening next in the future?
If this was a game of Command and Conquer, and you had a resource that was bleeding your resources, and you knew you were going to be focusing elsewhere, then yes, you'd shut it down. The thing is, you know, Calendar never really took off. It's, you know, it went up there. It just didn't go. So it's like, at which point do you keep a service going? You know, is it for 10 people? No. 100 people? No. 10 million people? Yes. Somewhere in that line, there is a flip point. There has to be, you know, basic economics. And if you drop below that flip point, then your choices are either advertise like crazy and get more people on, or just say, you know, that's it. We're all switching over anyway. We're going to do something Exchange-based because we've got Windows Phone coming up and we need to have that working as well. And we're going through a rebranding anyway. And we've seen the server bills, and our contract with Yahoo only works a certain amount of time, but they never wanted to use that bit anyway. You know, so, you know, in the cold heart of day, you know, businesses change. A lot of people have criticized Nokia for not changing fast enough, for not making big decisions. And admittedly, this is a big decision and they've made it. Short term, it's going to cause problems for some people. But then, you know, so is that loss of iSync out of macOS that Steve was talking about earlier. So it's, you know, the needs of the many and the needs of the few. And yes, I've just quoted the Wrath of Khan. So the short answer is yes, it was deserved.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Spock.
I've got a pun. I've got another pun. Surrounded by comics up here. Are you ready?
Go on then, Ewan.
It's a good one. Ovi's being shown the Ovi.
Oh
dear.
For those that don't know, Ovi in Finnish is means door, so Ewan's using his great wit to inform us that Ovi Calendar is being shown the door. Thank you for that, Ewan. David, do you have a take on this?
Yes, I think the way Calendar was, it was never going to catch on, and I'm not looking at it from a business perspective. I'm looking at it from the perspective of the user at home deciding how to use their phone. And there's two problems with Calendar. First of all, it wasn't visible enough. There was no, like, suggestion that you should go to Ovi.com and use it. Secondly, it's a classic tale of open versus closed. With all of the OVPIM services did not have any import or export function, and admittedly, for getting the average user to go and use it, the import function was more important. Say if you wanted to get away from using Outlook or whatever, or even if you're going back along with Lotus Notes or whatever, to export a file from your desktop application and upload it into a website and then sync your phone. Because rightly or wrongly, I mean, the way people do work is that the computer, whether it be web or a desktop application, is the server and the phone is the client. You don't think of the phone running the computer. And if there had been a way to actually get your data in and out of the website, it would have been much more flexible to use. I mean, the actual design of OVCandle was nice. I mean, it was lacking some functionality, but for just basic everyday use, it was fine and it looked great. But there was actually no way to practically use it because you couldn't easily get your data in and out, and that was a problem. Your data needs to be able to move freely.
Yeah, it was very much a phone link service with the idea that you'd upload from the phone, which I think in some markets makes a lot of sense, but in other markets perhaps less so. As I said, sad to see this go, and there is one particular thing that I think people will miss from OVCalendar, those that use it, is the fact it supported multiple calendars sync from Symbian 3 devices, and there are very few online calendars that actually do that, and I don't think there's any that do it natively. Please correct us in the comments if we're wrong, but if you do use that multiple calendar sync, I can recommend an application called Google Sync. It does cost about £12, but then that allows you to do multiple calendar sync with Google Calendar, and it works very slickly. It's all very well implemented and thoroughly recommended from me. So I think, you know, with this Google, with this OVCalendar, obviously for those that are using it, it's rather inconvenient. They are providing an export option into an ICS format, so you can then import it into another calendar should you wish to. But otherwise, yes, we're saying goodbye to that at the end of August. Now, staying with PIM-related stuff, Ewan, I know you've got something to talk about here in terms of PIM software and how you've been using it around the Edinburgh Fringe, plug, Ewan's podcast.
Yes. Now, for those people who know, whenever I go out and do conference and special events like this, I tend to take a bit of equipment into the wild and give it a real break this year. And Rafe, I hope you're sitting down here. But this time, I've been having a look at the Galaxy Tab 7-inch tablet from Android, sitting alongside the E7 and the trusty FileFX as well. Can I just say that the PIM software really isn't working for me absolutely anywhere. Apart from some fundamental errors in the Android tablet, which is it doesn't sync back from the device. How did that get through testing? If I make a change on the web, it syncs to the device. If I make a change on the device, it doesn't sync back to the web. fundamental problems number one, which basically means that the tablet is useless for me doing diary management because I'm sharing so many people that I'm producing the podcast with in viewing things because I'm doing like 6 or 7 appointments a day, 4 or 5 shows, every one of them in a different venue and location. There's a lot of PIM data to go through. D7 again, it syncs to a Google Calendar, and it's that multiple calendar sync that I'm finding a real problem on pretty much every single device. It's the same with Windows Phone as well. It only syncs to one calendar in Google. And it's like there's so many of these, you know, diary sync are assuming that there's going to be one cloud, one device, and one person. And that, it's just not working for me. You know, I need to have that diary synced and viewed by a lot of people, to be edited by a lot of people, and it could be on multiple devices. So we've got Google Calendar in the cloud, we've got a tablet, we've got the E7, we've got a Windows Phone 7, and it's just, it's not being done magically. And I think that's my big problem, you know, because sync has been an issue for decades. And there was a point maybe about 9 or 10 years ago where it looked like we were actually going to have a breakthrough. We were going to have a single standard, as we do with email, that flows through absolutely everything. It looked like we were going to have sync that would work in multiple directions at the same time. And I just don't see it. And I know you guys kind of laugh and point and giggle when the FileFX comes out, but it's the only thing that I will always have with me that I can have with multiple calendar access. And then if I need to make a phone call, if I need to do a web lookup, I just put the device on the opposite side of the page and copy it over by hand. Not because I'm some philistine, because it's the only system that works for me. And I've just never found a sync solution that just does what it needs to do, and it drives me crazy.
It's a point that's well made, I think, here. There are, as everyone will know, workarounds for all this sort of thing, both on all the platforms, Android, iOS, or Symbian, whatever you're using. And I've mentioned Google Sync earlier in this podcast, which allows you to do multiple Google Calendar sync onto Symbian, for example. But yes, I think this is an interesting issue because PIM, in many ways, hasn't advanced much beyond what it was back in the Palm days. And the biggest innovation of recent years has really been the integration of social networking. So we end up with a kind of the universal or the one address book and starting to bring in location as well. But there are still some issues around basic calendaring and sync, particularly for the power users.
Well, just to balance things out a little bit, I have had years of sync nightmares, but for the last couple of years, I've actually been quite happy. And thanks to Nueva Sync and Google, I'm actually managing to keep in sync Symbian, Android, Windows Phone, and Mema, all in sync with my Google data, and I'm not having any conflicts or disasters, and I'm quite happy with it. Although I will say that I'm not using multiple calendars because I used to, but I just found that I found multiple calendars to be something of a redundancy. It's either on my calendar or it isn't, and if it isn't, I'm not interested in it. So
I'm with Ewan here. I do actually use multiple calendars, and it's particularly when you're sharing with other people and organising around a specific event. But even there, Nueva Sync that you refer to there, Dave, really comes in my classification as a workaround. It's not something that, you know, you get kind of out of the box, if you like.
Yeah, David, let me ask you two questions. Would you be able to describe this and get your gran or your dad to set this up with Nueva Sync, this pattern that you have?
Yes, because it's just a case of, I could, because it just says, set up an account of a website, give them your Google details, and then follow the helpful pages of instructions on the website for setting up your phone. Setting up the phone isn't complicated, it's just a case of putting in your username, password, and www.nuevasync.com for the server.
And do you need to be aware of Nueva Sync? You know, do you have to think, I have to sync, I have to do things in a certain way? You know, have you changed your procedures to work with Nueva Sync?
In general, no. There's one little exception for handling tasks. But in general, for just contacts and calendar, absolutely not, because it's mail for exchange. And on Symbian, that means as soon as an email comes in, all of the calendar and contacts get updated. So I actually don't have to think about it.
Although, as Ewan, I think, is getting at there, you do actually have to be aware of Nueva Sync. And as I said, it's a workaround that doesn't work out of the box. And I still think there's room for improvement from all the manufacturers there to actually get things working better. Ewan, I just want to go back to you briefly. You've been using an E7 and a Galaxy Tab, which are very contrasting devices in some ways, but perhaps, you know, aimed at the same kind of person in terms of, you know, being mobile road companions. Have you got any sort of particular view on which style suits you better?
Not at the moment. The great thing about the Fringe is at least 3 weeks, and I'm only 1 week in, so there's still another 2 weeks of, you know, using the devices in anger. Right now, if you said you can only have one to run out the door with, I would grab the E7.
Okay.
And it's a weird one, because where the tablet works brilliantly is that is sitting next to me on a table when I'm recording interviews and podcasting. It's a nice little size for just flipping through information. But the second I want to do any sort of work, the second that I want to do text input that's more than 140 characters, the tablet is really struggling. The Samsung keyboard, which is on screen, is just so slow and inaccurate. Swipe is on board, so swipe is a good option, but swipe just doesn't have the speed either of T9 on the E7 or even the E7's keyboard. There's, because it requires you to keep looking at different parts of the screen. The E7 keyboard, I can type and I can look at the screen. On T9, I can just type because I'm an old fart that knows how to do this stuff. and there is some feedback, and it's easy to know where your finger is. Because of the size of the tablet, you don't know where your finger is automatically because of the scale of the device that you have. Neither, because it's a completely smooth surface, and the same with the buttons are capacitive buttons. There's nothing in terms of feedback or anything going on, and swipe requires quite sharp edges. When you're walking along the street, it doesn't go. So in terms of input, the E7 wins clearly. In terms of consuming stuff as well, it's about 50-50. And yes, the Tab has a larger screen, but in terms of pixel density, it's much slower. The E7 screen has more information on it, even though the Tab is nicer to look at. And for all the people that are talking about the delights of the Android web browser and a big, massive 1 gigahertz processors, I'm finding it just as clunky as the Nokia browser, and Opera Mini running through the Opera proxy service is still the winner.
Oh, that's interesting. Well, we'll definitely get you in to talk a bit more about this. I mean, I said they're trying to do the same job, but they're obviously taking very different approaches, kind of the mobile phone with a computer E7 approach, you know, pioneered with the early communicators, where the Tab is kind of obviously the cut down 10-inch tablet to 7 inches and is more, I think, computing led. And that is, Ian mentioned there, carrying it along and being able to type, obviously, mobile versus sitting down type usage scenarios. Anyway,
I really miss, just very briefly, USB on the go.
Okay,
the Tab doesn't have it. It has a proprietary cable, but there's no mini USB ports or anything. You know, if I got the E7 and I want to put in a USB hub, throw a keyboard on it, throw a mouse on it, stick an external monitor, and I could do that with the E7. With the Tab, I'm going to have to struggle with a bit of Bluetooth and just watch the battery start to drop away. And also, battery power, 4,000 milliamps on the Tab, 1,300 on the E7. They're both getting about the same amount of battery life in terms of hours used.
Okay, well, there we go. So we'll get you in to report back more on that later. One last item that I want to try and get to before we end this podcast is David's been trailing out an application called Nest Drop, which I think is a comparison, really, to Nokia Beta Labs' Nokia Drop. So, David, tell us about Nest Drop.
Nest Drop is not what I really expected from it. Nest Drop is a web-based service, and the idea is that you have a bookmarklet in your desktop browser. And when you're on a web page, you can either just click the bookmarklet and it will save the URL to your Nest Drop account, or you can highlight some text and click the bookmark and it will save it as a note. There isn't an application on Symbian. Instead, you either go to the Nest Drop page in your web browser on the phone, or there is a runtime widget which will load the page for you, and then you can view the things that you've saved. This is by no means as good as Nokia Drop, because there's no push notifications,
and I assume it doesn't integrate in quite the same way either.
No, it really doesn't, and you can't push it in any other sort of content. So I really think this is a poor man's imitation. And actually, when you're at the point of using a bookmarklet in your browser and looking up on your phone, you may as well go back to something like SimPaper and use, which is the Read It Later client, or even use the Google Reader note bookmarklet and the Google Reader in your web browser as well. So I don't really see much advantage in this, but it's interesting to see someone trying to imitate and reproduce what Nokia are doing, but perhaps making it more accessible.
Okay, well, thank you, David. We'll of course have more next week on all of these usual topics, be it software, services or platforms. But thank you for listening to this week's All About Symbian Insight podcast. It only remains for me to ask Steve Litchfield to say goodbye, which he can't because he's already gone. So bye from Steve. Also from David up in Hull.
Goodbye, everyone. And maybe next week you won't make any jokes about Hull.
Yeah, that's a possibility, but somehow I doubt it. And a goodbye from Ewan.
Not make any jokes about Hull. I'll let you know that I am part of the Inclusive Society, and I will slag off any city or any town that thinks it's a city in the UK if it will get me a cheap laugh and somebody going, oh, and make their lives just that tiny bit brighter and happier, even if it's for 5 seconds in the day. Our job is to make people enjoy society and everything, for good or bad. You know, Hull is going to come into that.
Thank you, Ewan, for that, as the unique ending. It's goodbye from me, Rafe Blanford, as well. You can follow us at www.allaboutsymbian.com, at AAS on Twitter, and at David Gilson, at Steve Litchfield, don't forget the T, at Ewan Spence, and at Rafe Blanford. Thanks for listening, and we'll hear from you. No, you won't. You'll hear from us next week.